Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry, with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great, too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
The 383rd edition of the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is brought to you by Circa Sports. Circa Sports is back with their Circa Survivor in Circa Millions contest. $14 million up for grabs. Get all the details at circasports.com.
Hello, DeGenerinos, and welcome to episode 383 of the Sports Gambling Podcast. I did it again. The MMA Gambling Podcast and the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Don't even know the name of my own show. It's going to be a fantastic episode, as per usual. Thanks for coming to the podcast. I'm one of the hosts, Jeff Chalks Fox, the chalky half of the duo. Even though I'm less chalky, as the days go by, I seem to be getting more into the dogs and hitty dogs. So we shall see. That's not a good clip, hitting dogs. Again, we got to stop saying that. But anyhow, thanks for coming to the show. We've got a UFC fight night event, but it's not at the UFC Apex this week. No, they're in the O2 Arena in London. So it's a higher quality fight card, I think we decided, than the usual fight night. So we shall dive into it this episode with the prelims. It's going to be jam-packed episode because there's like 29 prelim fights we have to go through. So let's bring in my co-host to help me get through this slog. It'll be fun, a fun slog, but a slog nonetheless. It's the one and only Daniel Gumby Reeland. Hello.
So you mentioned this one being outside of the Apex, which is good news. Did you know 8 of the next 9 are outside of the Apex?
Yeah, I saw, I can't remember where I saw it, but yes, I did see someone commenting how the Apex seems to be getting phased out, which I don't know if I like that or not. I guess it's good. I kind of like the Apex too, though.
Yeah, and I've actually heard from some fighters recently that they like the Apex, which is kind of weird. Yeah, Panny Kianzad recently said that she loves the Apex, and I can't remember who the other one was, but they said, you know, like, it's got everything you need. It's all right in one spot for you, so who wouldn't love the Apex? But with that being said, you know, it is nice to see them get out to some of the non-traditional locations, too. You know, like, you know, they always do, you know, Jacksonville, Florida, and Los Angeles, and, you know, Boston usually gets a show, and New York City, but, like, they're getting out to Nashville, which is kind of cool, and Salt Lake City is slowly getting, like, a lot of events for some reason, and they're going there.
They're getting pay-per-views, too. Yeah, they're getting pay-per-view in a week, right?
Yeah, is that 2 straight pay-per-views for Salt Lake City, which is a real weird thing?
Possibly, yeah.
And then they're going back to Brazil in November, so, like, it's some locations that haven't been getting shows too. So I appreciate that as well.
Yes, that is true. Good point. And it's always good to have a raucous crowd on hand, which usually they are in London. Apparently you and I are way off base. I was listening to Severe MMA on the weekend, and Sean Sheehan was talking about how this UFC card is not a very good card. And the Cage Warriors one coming up is a stack card. So we had it totally opposite. We did those
episodes. This Cage Warriors card is terrible.
He said it's stacked with prospects, and you said the opposite. And then we said this fight night card and UFC fight night card is great, and he thinks it's not good. So
yeah, there's nothing better than an 11-7 champion defending his belt against a guy who's already beat him. Like, what? You know, and yeah, maybe Vucenic is kind of fun, but like, That Skibinski-Flaminas fight isn't filled with prospects either. I guess he probably loves Harry Hardwick, but it's the worst of the two Hardwick brothers. The other one's going to be on Contender Series. So, yeah, I don't know what he's talking about.
Oh, yeah, that's I'm putting it together now. George and Harry would be brothers.
Yeah, the Hardwick brothers. And George is way better than Harry. Harry lost to Richie Smolin. Do you know Richie Smolin from The Ultimate Fighter?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not a phenomenal. I don't know. That's a kind of a rough Cage Warriors card, but maybe that's when you're filled with Irish locals and stuff like that, and people who you're around. Like, I'm sure it seems a lot better than it is. It's the exact reason why I love Cage Titans cards. Every Cage Titans card, I'm like, oh yeah, this card rules. And
because it's all a bunch of assholes, right? Yeah,
it's a bunch of people I've heard of.
Yeah, it is true. All right, we like I said, this is a jam packed episode. I just counted to make sure I didn't miscount the first time. 9 fights were breaking out today, Dan.
That's 9 on the prelims, 6 9 on the main card, prelim. If I'm not mistaken.
Well, the prelims, I actually found some dogs on. I had a harder time on the main card finding dogs, even though I have two wet dogs in real life right beside me currently, stinky wet dogs. But on this fight card, didn't find a heck of a lot of dogs in the main card, but the prelims is where I did find some plus ones I liked, even though some of the lines have shifted since I broke it down on Monday.
Yeah, they have been moving a lot, I feel like. Because there was one that I thought I had a dog on, and I looked this morning. And it'll be interesting to see what lines you have here, because as of this morning, I had him as a favorite, which was kind of surprising to me. So
we're probably talking about the same fight. We'll see when we get to it. But yeah, awesome. I had the exact same thing. I like, okay, well, this guy's a dog. Nope, he's a favorite now. So yeah. All right. And enough pattering around. Let's get down to it after I tell you about Circa Sports. Circa Millions and Circa Survivor are back. 14 million guaranteed prizes are up for grabs. Circa Millions are 5 NFL picks against the spread each week. And Circa Survivor is you just pick a different money line winner each week. Enter in Vegas, play from anywhere. Sports Gambling Podcast will be out there in Las Vegas the last weekend in August. CircaSports.com for all the details. That's CircaSports.com. Gumby, are you still going to get UFC Boston tickets or ticket if you win 14 million?
I realize that probably the winner of Circa Millions is going to come after UFC Boston. So maybe I'll have to find
a different joke.
Yeah, I have to find another overpriced UFC event to get tickets to.
Okay, very good. Very good. And then Cowboys, obviously, are the pick, according to Gumby. So the bosses have not complained about you saying Cowboys yet. So must not be listening, or Dan would have been out in his ass by now. So, all right, let's get down to UFC Fight Night. Aspinall versus Tybura. Yes, Tom Aspinall is back. He's going down this Saturday. Do you have the time right in front of you for it or not?
Prelims start at noon Eastern.
Okay, noon Eastern. Thank you, sir. Are the prelims on ESPN Plus and UFC Fight Pass. The O2 Arena in London is the spot where it is taking place. Card has been pretty... I don't want to jinx it, but it's been pretty... pretty steady the whole time. We haven't had a lot of flux as per usual. So we'll start things off in the flyweight division on the male side. Jafel Filho versus Daniel Baryz. I will tell you about Baryz first. 16-5, 7 knockouts, 6 submissions. He's been submitted twice. This is his UFC debut. He went 0-1 on the Contender Series, but here he is in the UFC. Since that time, he's won 4 straight fights. And 10 of 11. So basically, the one you lost was on the Contender Series. Who do you lose to, Dan?
Carlos Hernandez. Split decision.
Okay, right. His four straight wins have all come via finish. Used fight up at Bantamweight, was the Bama champion. 2012 pro MMA debut. Based off of his one fight, he's got better striking stats and he's more active landing strikes than Filho. He's also got better grappling stats. He was outstruck by Carlos Hernandez by 1.66 strikes per minute. He's at +110. Pastor Filho, 14-3, 5 knockouts, 8 submissions. So he's finished almost everyone. Impressive for a flyweight. And he's been submitted himself twice. 0-1 in the UFC, 1-0 in Contender Series. He's gone 5-1 over his last 6. He lost his last fight via submission, which was his UFC debut. He used to fight at Bantamweight as well. 2012 pro MMA debut for him as well. Inch of height, 2 inches of reach on Baryz, 5 years younger. He got outstruck over his two fights. We have stats for UFC and Contender Series. Was outstruck by 0.46 strikes per minute. He's at -125. So tell us about Breeze and give us your pick.
So I'm going to start by just saying, I'm actually going to take Breeze in this fight.
I am too. Dog right out the gate.
Yeah, so here's the thing for me is that I think that near submission that Jafel Filho had all by himself, that one submission, that one knee bar attempt that he had, I think that is 100% the reason why he comes in here as a favorite. Because if you just look at them stylistically, I think Breeze is a bad matchup for him. And I think that, like, what did Jafel Filho do in that fight other than that knee bar to make you be like, oh, yeah, Jafel Filho should be a favorite here? Like, he got out-grappled. He got taken down repeatedly. He tried 150 submissions from the bottom, only one of which was close. He got outboxed the entire time. And, like, it seemed like he had no answers for the wrestling, right? And granted, yeah, Mohamed Mokaev is a really good wrestler. So, like, let's give it to him there. It's, like, it's hard to defend takedowns from Mokaev. But Breeze is a good wrestler, too. You know, he got 5 takedowns on the Contender Series against Carlos Hernandez. Carlos Hernandez, other than that fight, has had pretty good takedown defense. You know, like, he stuffed a bunch from Walter Morano. He stuffed a bunch from Nascimento. He stuffed a couple from Denis Bondar. Like, he's a guy who stuffs takedowns. He had a tough time stuffing the takedowns of Breeze, and he kept trying for takedowns on Breeze and not getting them. So I think the thing about Breeze is he's most likely going to dictate where this fight goes, on the feet or on the mat. And I actually think he's a little bit faster than Filho on the feet too. So yeah, I like Breeze here. I think he's more well-rounded. I think he's going to be better in different places. Obviously, the short notice piece of it all is the little bit of hang up, but look, you're getting plus money on him. So yeah, I'd like Breeze here.
Is this short notice? When was this fight set up?
So it's not 100% short notice. I would say this fight probably got booked, I don't know, 3 weeks ago, maybe 4 weeks ago. The only reason I say short notice is because Filho was originally supposed to fight Juan Carmillo Ronderos, the one who tested positive for cocaine. Remember that guy?
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, he was originally supposed to fight that guy, which I think was supposed to be a gift to Filho for the knee bar he had on Mokaev, right? Like, it was like, oh, hey, you know, good job with that one submission attempt. You looked really good doing it. Here's a layup with Juan Carmillo Ronderos or whatever his name is. And then that guy pulled out of the fight. And instead, he gets this, like, what I think is a terrible matchup in Breeze. So nice to see Breeze get his shot, though.
Yep, definitely. So Breeze is our pick. To kick things off, we're going to move over to the female side and drop down to strawweight. Shauna Bannon, the Irish prospect, making her debut in the UFC against Bruna Brazil, who we were high on and then we soured on last fight. We'll tell you about Mama B first. Shauna Bannon, 5-0 with 2 knockouts. This is her UFC debut, as I said. 2-0 in Invicta, was regional champion, 4 inches reach on Brazil, plus 125 in her debut. The special one, Bruna Brazil, 8-3-1, 3 knockouts, 2 submissions. She's been knocked out 3 times, 0-1 in the UFC, 1-0 in Contender Series. She's won 7 of her last 8. She got TKO'd in her last fight. Is also a pro boxer, or was, inch taller than Bannon, minus 145. I haven't totally given up on Bruna Brazil yet. I think she's going to win this fight. She's going to be the way better striker against Shauna Bannon. And her last loss, her TKO loss to... Estella Nunes? Who was it? Denise Gomes has aged very well, because we saw what Denise Gomes did last event. So give me Brazil. I'm still on the hype train.
I'm with you. I'm going to go with Bruna Brazil too. Let me be honest. I really wanted to like Shauna Bannon in this fight because I do like her as a prospect. I think it's a little bit too much too soon.
Exactly.
And not that Bruna Brazil, like you said, she didn't look good in that last fight. While it has aged well, Shauna Bannon just isn't the same kind of fighter as Denise Gomes in any stretch of the imagination. She, like, doesn't have a ton of power. She's definitely a volume over strength kind of fighter. And, like, I think that plays poorly against Bruna Brazil. Bruna Brazil, really strong. We saw what she did to Marnik Mann in the Contender Series. She, like, kicked her head off. Like, I think... the fact that she's not going to be eating punches that feel like Denise Gomes threw, I think it's going to give Bruna Brazil a lot of confidence. I think you're going to see Bruna Brazil use her grappling. I think this Bruna Brazil will look like the one I thought was going to happen against Denise Gomes. Now, I'm not backing the truck up and dumping my bank account on it, because let's face it, we got burned once by Bruna Brazil, but I do think as a slight favorite in this spot, she's probably like a nice parlay piece here.
Throw her in a parlay. Sounds good to me. So we'll see if the special one gets back into our special hearts, Dan, our special group of fighters that we root for hard in the Discord, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/discord, of course. All right, let's go to lightweights, male side. Chris Duncan versus Yanel Ashmuz, a fighter who's, I realized I don't really know him because I missed his debut. That was when I was floating in the ocean. So Gumby can, I'm sure, fill us in on this. We'll tell you about the Red Fox first. Ashmuz, 7-0, 4 knockouts, 2 submissions, 1-0 in the UFC, won that fight via TKO. 1-0 in the PFL as well. Used to fight up at welterweight, 2 years younger than Duncan. Based off that one fight, his striking stats and he's more active landing strikes than Duncan is. Plus, he has better grappling stats, but very small sample size, obviously. He outstruck his opponent in his debut by 10.4 strikes per minute. He's at plus 130. The problem, Chris Duncan, 10-1, 7 knockouts, 1 submission. He was knocked out once, 1-1 in the UFC, 1-1 on Contender Series. He's won 3 straight fights. He also went 3-0 in Bellator. He used to fight at welterweight as well. Was regional champion, inch of height, 3 inches of reach on Ashmuz. Somehow he's got a plus minus strike differential of 0.0 despite having 3 fights. Wild. Minus 150 is the number on him.
I'm going to go dog here in Yanel Ashmuz. I like Chris Duncan. I remember he picked up that win over Charlie Campbell on Contender Series and made us all very happy in the Discord, because I think most of us were in on Chris Duncan. But let's face it, his 2 stints on the Contender Series look pretty bad in retrospect. He lost to Slava Claus in his first fight, got knocked cold, like real cold. And in that second fight that he did win against Charlie Campbell, I mean, he was on newborn baby deer legs. You know, like he was wobbling. He didn't look good in there. And then he pulled a knockout out of literally nowhere. So, like, the fact that he's got power in his hands gives him hope at any time. But also, like, the fact that he's been wobbled in both of his Contender Series fights. And then Omar Morales wobbled him, too. He's really been wobbled in his last 3 high-level fights. Ashmuz is a terrible opponent for him in those regards for 2 reasons. Number 1, Ashmuz just slapped Sam Patterson. And number 2, I also think Ashmuz just like has the wrestling to nullify that power that Chris Duncan has. Because while he didn't get to use it against Sam Patterson, he did against Dennis Hughes on it was PFL, but it was PFL Challenger Series, which is a little less prestigious there. But like he did get his wrestling going there. He's kind of like a little bowling ball. So I think Ashmuz has got a lot of weapons here that nullify what Duncan can do. And the power being the big one. So I'm gonna go Ashmuz.
Yeah, I will tell you here as well. Like you said, the power is a big thing. A guy who maybe we're questioning his chin going up against a guy who can crack. He's knocked out 4 of his last 5 opponents with a decision victory thrown in there as well. So yeah, let's roll the dice on another plus dog money fighter here. Plus, he's got a good nickname with Fox in it, so I can't go against that, can I? No. All right, women's bantamweights, Ketlin Vieira versus Penny Kianzad, the aforementioned Penny Kianzad. You can catch an interview her talking about her comeback on Top Turtle MMA podcast, which Gumby runs. A very good interview with Penny Kianzad. Let's tell you about her resume first. Banzai is the nickname, 16-6 with 3 knockouts. She knocked out herself once, submitted twice. 5-3 in the UFC over 2 stints. She went 2-0 in the Ultimate Fighter and then lost in the finals. Who'd she lose to, Dan?
Macy Chisholm.
Correct. Yeah, that was up at featherweight. She's won 5 of her last 6, including winning her last fight. That was back in April of 2022 because she tore her ACL in the gym. And as she told Dan in his interview, she could have came back earlier and was offered fights, but she wanted to make sure a full year was under her belt, make sure she was fit and ready to roll, and apparently she is. So there you go. Excuse me. She's missed weight a couple times before, so it's something you may want to keep in mind that this one's down at bantamweight. So may want to wait to see how she looks on the scale before if you're thinking of throwing some money on her, or even on the other side. Used to fight up at featherweight, as I said. Was a Cage Warriors champion, 2-3 in Invicta, 2012 pro MMA debut. striking and active striking stats are in her favor over Vieira. She's outstruck her UFC opponents by 1.2 strikes per minute. She's at plus 140. Phenomeno is the nickname for Vieira. We have another Phenomeno coming up in a couple of fights, if you can believe that. She is 13-3. Two knockouts, four submissions. She's been knocked out once. 7-3 in the UFC. So quite the vet at this point now. She's won two of her last three. However, only three of her last six. She did lose her last fight. She's also missed weight before. So likewise, like I was saying about Kianzad, you may want to wait until the weigh-ins on Friday morning. Multi-regional championships on her
mantle.
Correct. Get the t-shirt, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/store. She's an inch taller, 2 inches reach on Kianzad. Better grappling stats than her. She has been outstruck by her opponents in the UFC by 0.92 strikes per minute. So that's not so hot. She's at minus 150. Before I make a pick, I keep mentioning the weight thing. I will throw some stats out there for people who aren't aware of it. Fighters who miss weight are only winning 38% of the time historically. So something to keep, and same thing with this year, right on 38%. So something to keep in mind when you're picking these fights. All right. I'm going to go dog again. This is one of the ones I was this one and the last fight, Duncan Ashmoos, I was kind of going back and forth on, but it comes down to the striking. Kianzad's going to be the better striker here. Obviously the time off is a bit of a concern, especially considering it was due to an injury, but it sounds like she's done it correctly. Hasn't rushed any steps here. And is coming back fresh and ready to roll. Yeah, and I like what I saw from her more than Vieira, assuming she comes back the same fighter as she was before. So let's throw some on plus. Let's go again on some plus money on the better striker in a matchup.
And we're on the same page again. I'm also going to take Piana Kianzad. I think you're 100% right. I think if this fight takes place at range where they can strike, Piana Kianzad wins this fight. I think she's a faster striker. I think she's a sharper striker. There are two caveats to picking her. You have to think she can get off the cage when she wants to, because Ketlin Vieira needs to make this like a grinding, gritty fight against the cage. And if she does that, Ketlin Vieira can surely win it. So like she needs to be able to get off the cage. She needs to circle well. And she also, we also need to hope that her knee is fine. We need to hope that her mobility is the same as it was beforehand, because part of her allure and part of the best facets of Piana Kianzad are that she's quick on the feet. And she moves in and out well. So I think if she moves in and out well here against Ketlin Vieira, I think you're right. I think she's a way better striker. I think she lights her up. I don't think there's any chance she finishes her, because she just isn't that kind of striker. But right. I do think Piana Kianzad by decision here is an easy pick for me.
Yep. She is my pick as well. She looks to be in shape. When you look at Instagram and stuff, looks like doesn't look like she's struggling at all with condition or anything. So hopefully that means her knee is back and ready to roll. It's not like she's going to tell you if it's not anyhow. So we'll just have to assume that it is and hope, but it's plus money. So it's worth a roll of the dice, because we love underdogs and we do love Underdog Fantasy as well. We're brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Basketball Mania 4 is here, and Underdog Fantasy is giving away $15 million in prizes. Underdog Pick'em is also a great way to get down on your favorite MLB and NFL season player props. So many ways to win over on Underdog, and Underdog is available in so many states. Head over to underdogfantasy.com and use promo code SGPN for 100% deposit bonus up to $100. That's underdogfantasy.com, promo code SGPN. All right.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
We are moving to... Oh, I just remembered. I didn't dedicate this episode to anyone, did I, Dan? I butchered the opening.
We'll dedicate the next one to two people. How about that?
No, I'm dedicating this one to Ahmed Vert. Ahmed Vert fight week. If there's new listeners here or people with poor memories like me, just Google that name.
And, don't Google it.
Go ahead. Google the name and then you'll know who Ahmed Vert is. Oh, weird. Mahmoud Muradov's fighting now. And I said Ahmed Vert. Weird. Middleweights. Mahmoud Muradov from the famed fight promotion.
Oh, Muradov Fight League.
Muradov Fight League, exactly. He's going up against Brian Bam Bam Barbarina, a man who was interviewed by Gumby plenty of times in the past. Not on this week, though. But he's a regular on the Top Turtle. All right, we'll tell you about Bam Bam first. Bam Bam Barbarina, 18-10. 11 knockouts, 2 submissions. He's been knocked out twice, submitted 3 times. 9-8 in the UFC. He's lost two straight. Before that, he won 3 straight. Both of his losses recently, the last 2 have come via sub. He used to fight at welterweight and lightweight. It's hard to believe, picture him at lightweight, isn't it, at this point?
Yeah, it is at this
He's a big
point.
Boy. Yeah. He's not like fat or anything, but he's a big guy. Yeah. 2009, pro MMA debut. More active landing strikes than Muradov. He has outstruck his UFC opponents by almost a strike a minute, which is impressive. He's at plus 0.98 strike differential per minute, and he's at plus 275. Mahmoud Muradov, a.k.a. Ahmed Vert, 25-8, 17 knockouts, 3 submissions. He's been knocked out once, submitted 4 times, 3-2 in the UFC. He won his first 3 fights and then lost 2 straight. He's not won since January of 2021. However, he has multiple regional championships on his...
mantle.
Correct. Get the shirt, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/store. Can you see any of those? Can you see the mantle in any of his videos, Dan?
I have never watched any of his videos.
Okay. Just let I check. So you haven't seen his mantle.
I have not seen his mantle.
Okay. Just wanted to confirm. All right. 2012 pro MMA debut for him, which is common. Everyone on this fight card seems to have started 11 years ago. He also is a kickboxing champ. That's probably on his mantle as well. 2 inches of height, 3 inches of reach over Barbarina. He's got better grappling stats than Barbarina as well. He's outstruck his UFC opponents by 1.63 strikes per minute, which is impressive. And he is at minus 320. Not much value here.
I mean, I don't know that there's not value here, which is...
Oh, you're taking Barbarina?
No, I'm taking Muradov, and I still think there's value at negative 320.
No wonder Bam Bam's not on your podcast anymore.
And I love Brian Barbarina, both as a yep. as a fighter to watch, because he's super fun, and as a human being, like, he's also just, like, a great guy. But the problem is that this is a guy who fought at 170 pounds, and his biggest issues at that weight were being bullied, right? Jason, the vanilla gorilla wit, who did not do very good things in the UFC, bullied him. He took him down seemingly at will whenever he wanted to. And if that's the problem, if you're getting out wrestled, usually the remedy for that is to drop weight, right? If you're really a fast striker and you want to use that and go up a weight class, that's cool. But like, he's getting bodied by 170 pounders. He's going to go up 15 pounds now. And he's going to fight a guy right off the bat who's actually low-key a good wrestler. I know Muradov, that's like not his first thing that he goes to, but it's worth noting that Muradov did go 2-2 taking down Kai Bohio in his last fight, which is like not an easy thing to do. Kai Bohio is really freaking good. And now Bohio wound up getting the best of a lot of those grappling exchanges and wound up winning that fight pretty handedly. But like, Muradov can work on the mat when he needs to. He did it against Trevor Smith too. So I think, first of all, he's a better striker with a good chin in the wrestling in his back pocket. I think this is a slam dunk pick here. And I think it's one that will just add a whole bunch of value to every single parlay that you're trying to put together.
Well, there you go. Yeah. I'm taking Muradov as well. I was going to say unfair matchup, but there's no such thing, but yeah, this is a pretty lopsided matchup. Guy you can really crack. And and is going to really crack here, more than likely. So Muradov is the pick. We're moving to the heavyweights division. Wasn't Jamal Pogue supposed to be light heavyweight, Dan? He's back up to heavyweight again.
He said he was. So the last time I interviewed him before his debut, he said he wasn't ruling it out, but the UFC likes him at heavyweight and wants him to like put on the appropriate weight and like build himself up as a heavyweight, which I guess now he's kind of done. He says he expects to have a physique that looks a little bit more like a real heavyweight, which I don't know that that's a good thing all the time, but you know what I mean? A real heavyweight. For this
fight. Doesn't quite look like it yet, but maybe he's on his way. I'm not going to body shame the man. But.
Let's say this too, though, off the bat, because you're right. Like moving from light heavyweight when you made 205 a bunch of times to heavyweight, always kind of an alarm. He's got a build that works at heavyweight, though, right? Like he's a big dude. He's 6'3". He's got big, wide shoulders. He's got like a 77-inch reach. That's at least built like a heavyweight is, right?
Yep. Yeah, it's true. All right, let's break down the fight. He's fighting Nick Parkin, which is a perfect name for someone fighting in London. Sounds like an old-timey British boxer. All right, Parkin, 6-0, 5 knockouts, 1 submission, so he's finished everyone. This is his debut after going 1-0 in the Contender Series. He was a regional champion. He also is a kickboxer. He's an inch taller than Pogues. More active landing strikes based off of one fight. Better grappling stats based off of one fight as well. He was outstruck in that fight, though, by 4.62 strikes per minute. Yeah, he still won on Contender Series, plus 135. The Stormtrooper, Jamal Pogues, 10-3, 4 knockouts, 1 submission. He's been knocked out once, submitted twice, so he's been finishing all of his losses. 1-0 in the UFC, 2-0 in Contender Series. He's won 3 straight fights in 6 of 7. Used to fight at light heavyweight, as we were talking about there. Was a regional champion as well, 0-1 in Bellator. Based on their last weigh-ins, he was around 9 pounds heavier than Parkin. He's been outstruck over the 3 fights we have stats for by 0.2 strikes per minute, minus 148. Give me Pogues here. Just the better fighter, and just look at the resumes. Just look at who Parkin has fought. He's fought one real fighter, maybe two. I can't remember now. Maybe only one, but it's really been cans. So give me Pogues here.
And you said negative 148 on Pogues?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fun number.
I fun number, first of all. Second of all, yeah, I like Pogues too. Do you know why his nickname is the Stormtrooper?
No, let me know. Hopefully it has to do with Star Wars, not some other horrible thing.
So when he started training MMA, he was like a young kid, and he used to just, in the words of his coach, come into the gym and fuck shit up. Which is kind of like a Stormtrooper does. So yeah, I like him here too, and mostly just because it's a little bit of a fade to Mick Parkin. You know, you mentioned how badly he was outstruck in that Contender Series fight. It wasn't even that long, but like Eduardo Neves, like just absolutely pieced him up on the feet, brutalized him, had him on wobbly legs, and then inexplicably decided to grapple him in the wildest fashion, kind of tired himself out in grappling exchanges and got himself rear naked choked. It was much more of a, drop in the bag by Eduardo Neves than it was a comeback from Mick Parkin. And when you look at it, Jamal Pogues, he's got a better gas tank than that. He's smarter than that. And I also think he's a better grappler than Neves is. Like people forget that Pogues actually kind of started his career as a dude who, you know, grappled really well at light heavyweight, which was kind of unseen then. And that's why he made it through the regional scene so well as a light heavyweight. Now he's using his length a little bit better, and he's gotten a lot better boxing. I think he can box up Mick Parkin here. And even if he's not, I think he's going to have the grappling advantage. And I also don't know that Mick Parkin's got the cardio for him. Because, you know, it's worth noting, you know, Mick Parkin hasn't gotten to the third round in a professional fight ever. That's a little bit alarming. Because even the last loss for Pogues, even his last loss came in the 4th round. Because he was fighting an LFA title fight. Like, he goes deep into fights and looks fresh deep in those fights. He did against Josh Parisian. He did it against Paulo Renato. Like, he can deal with that. So, yeah, I like Pogues, and I even like him by a late stoppage here, probably.
See, Dan mentioned people who you probably have heard of that Pogues has fought. Looking at Michael Parkin, a.k.a. Mick Parkin, he fought Eduardo Neves on Contender Series 5-0, so that's legit. Before that, 6-9, 69, 7-7, 2-3, 2-17, and 1-10.
2-17 is great. Also, that guy was 2-17 when he fought McParkin. He's 2-28 now.
See, he's going to become one of the legends, is he? One of those legendary cans. That would be Jan Lysik.
Yeah.
Right? Or Jan Lysik?
Yeah, since the beginning of 2002, he's fought 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. He's fought 10 times since the beginning of 2002, and he hasn't made it out of the first round once.
Fantastic. So, yeah, hopefully we don't have egg on our face after picking Pogues here. We shall see. Let's move way down to lightweight. Mark Diakasi versus Joel Alvarez. I will tell you about DKC first. 16-6, 6 knockouts, 1 submission. He's been submitted twice. 7-6 in the UFC. He's won 2 of his last 3 and also 2 of his last 5. Did lose his last fight. Multiple regional championships on his
mantle.
Correct. Get the shirt at sportsgamblingpodcast.com/store. 2013 pro MMA debut. Barely outstrikes his opponents, but technically he does. 0.1 strikes per minute. Better grappling stats than Alvarez. Plus 165. El Fenomeno. So we got 2 phenoms on this card. He's 19-3, 3 knockouts, 16 submissions. So he's finished everyone, mostly on the ground. He's been knocked out himself twice. So he's only gotten the distance once. Speaking of gas tanks, keep that in mind. 4-2 in the UFC. He's won 4 of his last 5. However, he did get TKO'd in his last fight. That was back in February of 2022. That was to a good fighter as well. That guy.
Jalen Turner?
The Armenian. Oh, no, he lost to the Armenian. Armin Sarukian last fight.
Oh, Sarukian.
Yeah. That was back in February 2022. He's missed weight twice, so another thing to keep in mind. Was a regional champion, or I guess probably is, technically, in his heart. Used to fight down at featherweight, 2013 pro MMA debut as well, same as DKC. 5 inches taller, 4 inches of reach, more active landing strikes than DKC. However, he's been outstruck in the UFC by 0.24 strikes per minute. He's at minus 188. Gumby.
Another fun number, take Alvarez. I'm
wavering on this, so sell me.
So here's the thing. I am going to say I'm a little hesitant on pulling the trigger with any kind of real bet. As far as like who I think is going to win, I'll take Alvarez. Negative 188 slash Alvarez in general is a little bit, he's a little bit of a hesitation pick for me because of 2 things. Number one, I know he's longer here, right? He's got the reach advantage, you said, right?
Alvarez, yes, 4 inches.
Yeah, yeah,
inches
looks, height. He looks way bigger. So like I like that. I don't always know that he uses it. That's my first hesitation. And then my second hesitation is he's so good with the guillotine when somebody shoots a takedown. But
we
I'm
love
also
guillotines.
We love jumping guillotines here at the MMA Gambling Podcast. But I think Diakasi's going to shoot him, right? That's the thing. I think Diakasi, especially if he gets stung, is going to shoot him. Alvarez gets really comfortable laying on his back looking for submissions. So, like, if he doesn't get that guillotine, what are the odds he just spends, like, 12 minutes beneath Mark Diakasi in this fight and loses a dumb decision? I'd say the possibility is there. So, like, if you're asking me who I'm picking Alvarez, but if you're asking me if there's value at negative 188, I'm going to pump the brakes on that. I would probably, if I'm looking to play Alvarez, try to find a submission prop here. I don't see one of those posted yet, but that's probably what I'm looking for towards the end of fight week.
You sold me, but you sold me on the other side, Dan. I've decided to go Diakasi on this. I know he didn't look so hot in his last fight, but the 2 fights before that, he looked very good. Very good wrestling, and like you said, if guillotine does not get sunk in, DKC could very easily ground and pound his way to a decision victory here.
Does it alarm you that he couldn't wrestle Michael Johnson? Or are you just are you a Michael Johnson truther? Are you just actually being really good?
I definitely wouldn't say that. And the fact he's been submitted a couple times is an issue as well. But I like you said, I think there's value on the plus money on him. Look at me taking value picks. So not me. Plus, he doesn't have this super long layoff. He's not coming off a knockout loss. And he's going to be on home turf. So who knows how much that really is going to play into it, but hopefully it doesn't hurt. So let's go Diakasi. We got a difference, something, right?
That's right.
That's true. So good job selling me on the other side. All right, welterweights, Danny Roberts, Johnny Parsons. Is this the fight whose odds swapped on
you? Yeah, it was.
Yep, same as me. All right, we will tell you about the slugger knot first. Fantastic nickname. He doesn't fight enough for us to mention. I was going to say isn't mentioned enough, but that's because Johnny Parsons doesn't fight enough. The slugger knot, Johnny Parsons. 8-3 with 6 knockouts. He's been knocked out twice. This is his UFC debut, 1-0 in Contender Series. That was back in October of 2021. What's been going on since then? He is the striking coach at Syndicate MMA. Right. I shouldn't giggle about that, but it's true. It sounds funny when you say brain surgery, but it's very true.
It was brain surgery.
He did have a brain. Yep. This isn't brain surgery, but it was brain surgery. Yes. They found an abnormality after his fight. Great. Find it after he's fought for you.
No, they actually found it in the lead up to his UFC debut, because he was booked for a UFC debut. He was supposed to fight Michael Gilmore off the Ultimate Fighter.
The Gilmore girls. Yeah.
Yeah. That guy. And so they did miss it on Contender Series, seemingly, or it wasn't there. I don't know the condition of these types of things, but then they did catch it before he was actually supposed to fight.
Good. And he's all better and ready to roll, apparently.
I mean, I assume if they're going to let him fight. Yeah. Like I would have to assume that he's better.
Do they have to cut his mullet to do brain surgery?
He had a pretty gnarly scar on his head.
It was
pretty gross. I saw it. I think you can find it on his Instagram if you want.
Well, I'm sure Dan has it bookmarked. All right. Let's tell you about the slugger knot again. Where was it? Yeah. So that's why he's been out since October 2021. Just brain surgery. No big deal. He has won 5 straight fights. He's not lost since August of 2019. Used to fight up at a middleweight to 2013, pro MMA debut. 4 years younger than Roberts. More active landing strikes based off of one fight. He was outstruck in his Contender Series fight, though, by 1.67 strikes per minute. -105. So this is pretty much a pick'em. He was the bigger favorite. He was a favorite actually heading into this. And Roberts was plus money, but no longer. Hot chocolate, Daniel Roberts, 18-7, 8 knockouts, 5 submissions. He's been knocked out 4 times, submitted twice, 7-6 in the UFC. He's lost 2 straight. Before that, he won 2 straight. Before that, he lost 2 straight. So 0-2, 2-2, 2-4 is how that works out. Got TKO'd in his last fight, 20-10 pro MMA debut, 3-1 in pro boxing, 4 inches taller, 5 inches reach on Parsons. He's been outstruck in the UFC by 0.42 strikes per minute. Has better grappling stats than Parsons, -110. Give me hot chocolate, Roberts. I'm sad it's not a underdog any longer. Got to worry about a guy who's been out this long and had brain surgery, for God's sake. It is concerning that on the other side of the coin, it is concerning Parsons hits really hard and Roberts doesn't tend to get knocked out, but he can be knocked out. 4 of his 7 losses have come via knockout. He's coming off a TKO loss. In a bit of a slump here, but I like him better in this fight still. And plus he's going to be way better than Parsons and not all that ring rust. Hopefully a fully healthy brain as well. And he's fighting at home. So give me hot chocolate.
Yeah. And to ease your concerns a little bit about him being knocked out 4 times in his career. And granted, you know, it's not one of those things where I always say it's cumulative. So it's not like somebody who punches a little less hard won't knock you out because somebody did. But if you look at the people who've knocked out Danny Roberts, Jack Della Maddalena, Michelle Pereira, he was also knocked out by Nordine Tlaib and Mike Perry. So like dudes, two dudes who throw them, right? Dudes who hit. And I'm not saying that Johnny Parsons doesn't, because Johnny Parsons slugs a little bit too. That's why he's called the slugger knot, right? But the thing is about Johnny Parsons is he's given up 5 inches of reach here. And we saw when he fought Solomon Renfro, because that's who he fought on the Contender Series. Solomon Renfro just pieced him up in every corner of that cage until he was tired. I don't think Danny Roberts is going to tire himself out. I think he's a little bit smarter of a fighter than that. I also think he's going to stay away from the big throws from Johnny Parsons. You know, Johnny Parsons is, while a guy who throws real heavy, not a guy who disguises his strikes particularly well. And not for anything, I actually kind of think Solomon Renfro won that fight. So like the layoff, all of those other factors factored in, and you're still only getting Danny Roberts at -110. Yeah, I'll take that.
Solomon Renfro truther is who you are, Dan. Totally.
Yeah, but that's fine. I'd rather be that than a Michael Johnson truth there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely have to agree with that. All right. Main event time of the prelims. Bantamweights, Davy Grant versus Daniel Marcos. We'll tell you about Mr. Grant first. Dangerous Danny Grant, 15-6, 4 knockouts, 9 submissions. He's been submitted 4 times, 6-5 in the UFC. He's won 2 straight fights. Before that, he lost 2 straight. Before that, he won 3 straight. So 2-0, 2-2, 5-2. A man of streaks. Both of his most recent wins have come via finish. He was 2-0 in the Ultimate Fighter as well. Who did you lose to in the finals, Dan?
The Ultimate Fighter, you lost to Chris Holdsworth, I think.
Who is that? What happened to that guy?
I remember. I know he fought one more time. I want to say he beat Chico Camus. But then I think he had either some health issues or I think it was some health issues that just, you know, made him decide to quit MMA.
Okay. Fair enough. Back to Grant. He's regional champion, 2008 pro MMA debut, inch taller than Marcos, better grappling stats than Marcos. And he has outstruck his opponents by 0.89 strikes per minute in the UFC, plus 120 on Dangerous. Davey Sankara, is Marcos' nickname. He's 14-0 with 8 knockouts, 1-0 in the UFC, 1-0 in Contender Series, won his last fight via TKO, was regional champion, 8 years younger than Grant, better striking and stats, plus he's more active landing strikes. He's outstruck his UFC and Contender's opponents by almost 3 strikes a minute, a very impressive number, 2.96 strikes per minute, minus 138.
I'm going to go with Daniel Marcos here.
Me too.
I'm a big Davey Grant fan. I like Davey Grant a lot, but two things worry me in this fight about Davey Grant. The first is that he won't get close enough to Marcos based on how long Marcos fights. Because if you watch Daniel Marcos either on Contender Series like he did against, I think he fought Brandon Lewis in that fight, or the one against Simon Oliveira in his second fight, he fights a lot longer than his reach would dictate. You know, he's 5'7", he's got a 69-inch reach. And he fights a lot longer than that. He's essentially the same exact size as Davey Grant. And he fights, like I said, he fights longer than that. The second thing that worries me about Davey Grant is he's really fallen in love with his hands and not his wrestling. Because I think the path to trying to beat Daniel Marcos is to try to get in his face, wrestle a little bit here, and make him hesitant to throw. And I just don't think he's going to do enough of that or enough of that with success. I think Daniel Marcos is faster. I think he works the body better. And like I said, I think he uses his range better. So yeah, as much as I love Davey Grant, I'm always going to be a Davey Grant fan, man. Daniel Marcos here, I think is a good spot.
Way younger fighter at bantamweight as well. And a way better striker and more dangerous, even though the other guys call it dangerous. So yeah, Marcos, I think is the smart pick here. All right. This recap. We made it through all 9 prelim fights. It wasn't a slog. I was joking off the top. Some interesting fights here for sure. We both have Marcos. We both have Roberts. I have DKC. He has Alvarez. Both have Pogues. Both have Muradov. We both have Kianzad. Both have Ashmuz. We both have Brazil. We both have Baris. Sound correct?
That sounds correct.
Awesome. We're going to be back tomorrow to finish up this fight card. We're going to give you the main card and then all of our fancy props, parlays, locks, dogs, all that jazz tomorrow. Until then, you can catch us in the Discord, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/discord. We're in the fights channel in there more often than not. Twitter, SGP and MMA, Jeff Fox, writer, Gumby Vreeland. They're all the handles you want there. Instagram, if that's your jam, I'm at Jeff_Fox_writer. What else can I tell you about? Top Turtle Podcast. We told you about that already. Make sure you listen this week. You hear Penny Kianzad talk about her comeback. And you listen to a more talk about the Contender Series. Dan has a Contender Series upcoming fighter on the podcast. And his name is?
Abdul Karim Al-Sawadi.
Right.
Who's fighting the aforementioned, who we talked about earlier on in the show, yep. George Hardwick.
There you go. It all, just like a Seinfeld episode, everything ties together at the end. So what else? My Substack, get in there, sign up, free or paid, preferably paid, but then you get all my writing in your inbox and you can enter my free pick'em contest. That is at moneymma.substack.com. And then all things good in sports gambling, in the sports gambling landscape, is at sportsgamblingpodcast.com. We shall be back tomorrow. It will be me, Elfie Nomino, Jeff Fox, and my co-host, the Slugger Knot, Gumby Vreeland. We'll be riding shotgun as well, and we'll talk to you then. Bye.